good morning. It's Tuesday, December 18th, and you are listening to Brian and Gabe Live. This, of course, is neither Brian nor Gabe. This is Jack. And Brian is just joining us now in the recording studio.
Hey, Jack.
We were about to have an inmates take over the asylum type moment there. Justin and I were going to talk a little bit about what we did with what we spent the year doing with our videos.
Yeah, we thought it'd be fun.
Well, so is Gabe here, by the way?
He is not.
Oh, so he. So I've been actually IMing with him. So Justin, shoot him an email. He was around.
Okay.
Where is my headphone volume? Let's see. So speaking of videos, though, we won a nice award. DigiDay awarded the campaign that we did. Oh, there we are. That sounds better. So there we go. So DigiDay awarded the campaign that we did for RIM, the Embracing Mobile Chaos campaign. They gave us the best B2B video campaign of the year. So that's a pretty huge award. DigiDay is like, well, they're like Brian Madden, but they cover the online marketing, ad agency, brand kind of stuff. And Justin, you went out for the award show last week, I think, right?
I did. And it was pretty cool. They had it in Times Square, and it was sort of a mini Oscars style setup, which
now,
you know, can't
now,
argue with.
Were you a fan of Frasier?
I was.
Okay, so do you remember there's the CBs, the Seattle Broadcasting Awards, right? And remember Frasier asked like a date to go on one, and but it turns out it's like, I'll pick up, it's Saturday at 8, but it was actually like 8 a.m. and it wasn't in the Hilton, it was like in the, you know, like some center, it was like doing like a bat mitzvah the night before.
this was actually very nice. It was better than I expected. And there was a pretty good turnout, and they showed, actually the clip they showed was all Jack, so Jack got to make an appearance whether he liked it or not.
Oh, so they actually showed the
yeah.
Do you remember what clip that was? And the finalists are like,
I don't remember specifically, but I remember being like, oh, well, Jack's here too, this is good.
And I popped a link to that video campaign in the chat room in case anybody hasn't checked out that, but that's for Justin and I, especially, and Brian too, but Justin and I spent a good 7 months on this campaign producing, a couple of video, half a dozen videos a month.
We're going to call that a high quality learning experience, I think.
it was a lot of fun, but I'm glad to be back to spending all of my time doing more directly technical and writing related things.
Yes.
Okay, so the goal of today's show is to talk about, A, this sort of the year in review, and then B, the Surface tablets. And I know Gabe has ours right now, so maybe we'll wait till we track him down.
Yeah, he's IMing me. He's not quite ready yet, but he'll pop in when the...
He was... All right. So just kind of doing the year review, you know. So I went to there's a link I put in the show page that was, links back to like the very first posts that we wrote in 2012, and Jack, there's a bunch from you, from CES. Do you remember going to CES and you realize that was actually still this year?
That was a long time ago. Yeah. So CES, I felt like, it's a everybody should go once to see the spectacle type thing. And, I'm a consumerization blogger, so it's the consumer electronics show. So that
– those are the same thing,
that,
right?
That works, right?
Well, you were saying Dan Brinkman. Was it Dan Brinkman or
yeah.
Aaron Parker? Was it
– it was Dan Brinkman on Twitter the other day was asking about CES, and I said, I'm not going back, and he said, oh, that's not quite the encouraging tip over, that I needed to go buy the tickets, and I said, by all means, everybody should go at least once because it's the largest convention you'll ever see unless you go to CeBIT.
Yeah, or like, so there's probably some like robot convention in like Taipei that's has 45 million attendees, but the thing is, so from an IT standpoint, though, I mean, it's not really,
part of it. I went around looking for. We made T-shirts that said FUIT, and one of the afternoons we spent running around looking for devices that could help you say FUIT. things that you could bring in, like, there's something like it's kind of like a Laplink cable or like a double-ended USB cable that you can, you know, kind of plug in and pull everything off you want off your corporate desktop.
So, bro, I don't call you out too often, but Laplink cable?
I heard that term from you.
Where did you read about that? Okay, because I know you hadn't seen one of those.
I have.
You know what that was? That was parallel cable,
it was
right?
Parallel or serial,
it was
right?
Parallel. Yeah. You plugged you plug two computers here via the printer port.
Well,
and traded files.
So the other big part of the Consumer Electronics Show is, if we can remember such a time, in January of this year, we were still trying to figure out the matrix of what versions of Windows 8 would have what user interfaces and run which applications and run on which platforms. And we went there not knowing the answers to all of these questions, or, you know, did we even know about the Surface then?
No.
We did not.
No. So so if you look back at that page from January, there was like five articles written in January about Metro, Windows 8, ARM processors, like, is the future of the keyboard and mice dead? You know, all of this kind of stuff. All these unanswered questions. And I was kind of laughing this morning as I was looking through that, sort of reviewing the year, that, like, we don't still know any of those answers.
I think we do know some of the answers. And it's like we're going to continue going on using our iPads the same way that we have been. Windows 8 will be, you know, look at how well Surface tablets are selling.
the Surface tablets, do you see that? They're going to sell them at like
King,
Kinko's, Best Buy, Staples,
CompUSA.
But yeah, it's funny because Microsoft, that's the thing, because
I just glancing at the page, I also noticed from January 3rd, is Microsoft really building an iOS version of Office? We still don't know that for sure, and it's a year later.
And I love I love that someone found like some posting in some, you know, Czech Republic website in slide number 47 that had a reference to Office for iOS, and they're like, "Oh, that proves it."
And now about 1,000 different articles have called this, like, yes, Microsoft Office for iOS will be coming out, and it'll be doing like this, and one of the things that I said in an article at some point this year, just regarding that, is that if they're holding out on real Office for iOS because they think it'll drive people to the Surface tablet, obviously that's not happening. And
you can go ahead and drop that now.
And the other thing is, like, okay, well, I'll just continue using QuickOffice and Dropbox and doing whatever I've been doing for the last 3 years, as long as the iPad has existed. So,
well, that's a good question. It's a balance, right? Because, like, at some point, so I totally get that they may, like, Office for iOS may be ready to go. Like, they just got to push send.
We've been living without it for 3 years.
And we're fine.
And people have been writing articles on tablets still, for 3 years.
And they've still sold 50 million or 100 million iPads or whatever it's been, right? Like, with no Office.
So, now, wait a minute. Hey, guys.
Hey, Gabe.
Glad the voice of reason just showed up.
Turn off this echo filter.
You can finish your thought. I do have a thought on
that. But I was going to say, so
came in halfway through.
You're right, because if Microsoft has been waiting to see, like, hoping to push Surface and Windows and Windows 8 tablets, let's say, they've been holding back Office for iOS in order to goose those sales. Well, the fact that, you know, they cut down, they ordered 4 million Surface tablets and they cut that down to 2 million, and we believe the estimates are they've sold 300,000 to 400,000. And they talked about how exclusive they want to control the experience, and now they're selling it at Staples or Office Max or whatever the store is. I think at this point you can go ahead and release, because you know the Office group within Microsoft, of course, wants to release Office for iOS. And they're like, can we? Can we now? How about now? Come on. How about now? Can we?
Yeah. But is Office for iOS, is it going to be, as I'm making air quotes, touch-enabled as Office for Surfaces? Because, like... like office
I hope not.
Like the office that's on the Surface, like, I don't know what about that is No, they what about that you could do without a mouse?
Right, and it's no different than what you couldn't do yourself if you use the accessibility options and the menu customizations.
Yeah, like, I mean, well, it's running local.
But what I'm saying is, like, you could do that, like, with touch enable Office on yourself.
It's not a true touch based document editor the way that QuickOffice or real native ones are.
Well, the fact that iOS, though, is a completely different platform, they legitimately did have to write it from scratch. So at that point, it's like,
So hopefully they...
Yeah, that's a good touch enable. I'm sure they'll nail that. And, like, you know, the touch enabled apps, for example, that they wrote for Tile World, like our word for, like, David Pogue's word for, like, Metro. Those are perfectly fine, great touch-enabled apps. Yeah. So, like, they can do touch. It's just that they didn't.
They didn't do it. Yeah, they didn't do it for Tile World.
So here's the thing. So I look forward to an Office for iOS because I just want something that works in all the situations I need. Like, QuickOffice is fine, except I tried to download the draft of Jack's book to it so that I could work on it on my iPad or look at it on my iPad, and it crashed. Because the book is apparently too big, or for whatever, who the hell knows?
God damn you,
but,
Jack.
Yeah, screw you, Jack, for writing such a comprehensive book. But offline use for Google Docs wasn't working on the iPad either, and I didn't really expect it to. I was just checking to see.
How about in Chrome?
In Chrome on my laptop, it works fine. Not on Chrome on my iPad.
But maybe give Google another 6 months and
I'm so fucking tired of giving Google 6 months to make Docs be worthwhile.
Yeah,
like, that's just it. Like, if Microsoft releases Office tomorrow, I am on that bandwagon.
Like, so QuickOffice doesn't work with, you're saying, with Jack's book?
Correct. It crashed.
Oh. How about the Google Docs app?
The Google
That did not work either.
But see that's not that big of a deal for me anyway, because that's like, yeah, maybe you want to read that document on the iPad, but, you know, I'm doing
understood,
all my,
but I, yeah. What my point though is that
it's
Docs
a hole.
And the supporting applications continue to disappoint me in terms of features, in terms of the actual interface, and in terms of accessibility on whatever device I wanted to use. And so I you had just wrote, I think, Brian, with your files article that, you know, you don't use Office anymore, and that's fine. I don't know how the hell you can do that. I hate the fact that when somebody sends me a .docx file, I have to upload it to Google Docs.
Oh, no, I just click it. It opens in text. It opens in, like, there's some preview thing on Mac that opens it.
Yeah, but I don't want that. Like, if I have to edit it or something like that, I need to put it in Docs then.
Oh, you must have a different job than me. I don't mean that to sound like a jerk. I mean, like,
no, I know.
I've never had to, like...
Every time
Doc.
I go on vacation, you remember.
So fun. But Gabe, apart from – this is like Monty Python and the Romans. Okay,
so
fine.
Apart from,
but apart from the features, the interfaces, the accessibility, and the lack of crashing, what don't you like with Google Docs?
Hey, remember how happy I was in May when we got offline Google Docs editing? Like, that sort of completed my life, and it's like I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly. And I do miss offline – spreadsheet editing. So that's going to be – because offline is a bigger deal to me since I spend so much time on airplanes. But that's, I'm sure, coming. I don't know.
But you're content to wait for it though, which is that – yeah. That's my thing. I just want something that works right effing now.
Yeah. And the reason – you know the reason – so I do have Numbers, which is Apple's spreadsheet application, which is about as feature parity as Google Spreadsheets.
Or Microsoft Works,
which for me is fine. The thing is though, and this is going to sound so lame, but like, I love the App Store, and the single reason that I use Numbers instead of Excel is because, like, how do I get Excel? I gotta like find this thing and like download it and like find my keys or like find the disk. Like, I've got an Office disk. I don't have a device in my life that can read optical disks anymore. So I got to like bring it to work and get a USB stick. And by the time I'm like, oh, it's fuck it. It's $19 or whatever. I have Numbers now. And I did that once like 2 years ago or whatever. And then like now I just push the button and like Numbers reappears on whatever computer I need it on. So
you know what's interesting? The App Store thing. So we had the whole Citrix thing last week where they pulled the app. And I've been in a situation before too. I don't remember what, it was a game, but I can't remember what it was. But it was early on the App Store days on the Mac. And I bought a game and then I got a new Mac and I went to go find that game and they pulled it from the App Store. And so now, even though I bought this thing, I don't own it anymore. Like, I don't have it. So I should be able to use it, but I don't. So there's – I too like the App Store model. I like that all my updates are there. I like that I can just get them and – I mean, it's slick in that way. But there's some holes in it still.
But software you have to activate is the same thing.
Yeah. But at least there I actually own it. Like, I have an actual copy of it.
Yeah, but if you
bits.
Can't activate it, then who cares? If you're searching for crack your activation, you can search for a
– Oh, I see. Yeah.
The download of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Good point.
Okay, so now that we got Cave, so we're kind of doing the year review, and then we'll come back on the Surface thing, I guess. Remember this year also was On Live.
Oh, man.
And so to reset that, so everyone remembers On Live and how they went out of business partly for
– Like September, October.
Flagrantly violating Microsoft's licensing agreements by hosting Windows 7 desktops.
They went out of business after that. We don't know if it was because of that.
Right. Yeah. They flagrantly, is that the word, disregarded Microsoft licensing policies, comma, they also went out of business. I'm not saying this is cause and effect. I'm just saying two facts. First I'm saying one fact, then I'm saying the second fact.
Yeah.
But Gabe has – well, first of all, so Gabe, you and Jack went to meet with that dude to learn about On Live.
Yeah. And this is like we Google searched the guy before we left, and we realized that we're going down to meet Steve Perlman, right? We Googled him on the way down or something like
no,
that.
No, we Googled him on the way out of the meeting
because he was such a shock.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so we go down there, we meet with this guy. He's he's typical Silicon Valley CEO kind of guy, but he tells us all. This is Steve Perlman, by the way. We get the demo, and what was cool is that we got the demo with the CEO. So we think, all right, this will be cool. And so we sit down, we talk to him about the technology, and this is just after they'd released their Windows desktop thing. And so we're like, score, we get to talk, pry this guy and figure out how exactly they're delivering Windows 7 desktops for nothing or for $5 a month or for whatever.
Yeah, this is like
was.
Windows 7 VDI. It's like desktop as a service for iPad users, right? So $5 a month, you get a Windows 7 desktop from your iPad.
Yeah, yes, exactly. They had a free version, but it had nothing. I mean, like nothing. No Internet
Explorer.
It was
the desktop. You could change
essentially like a Surface tablet. Yeah.
It was a tile world.
It turned your iPad into a Surface tablet.
Complete with a short battery life and a super slow performance.
And so, what's that, Jack?
Oh, well, I was – so remember that they On Live gave a presentation at the Consumer Electronics Show, which Ryan and I were talking about before you got here. And they were given the, like, it's Windows on data center class hardware, and look at how fast it is. And when you do the ping, it thinks that we're in, where the data center is and, all that crap.
And
that's
the exact demo that we got.
Yeah, and we're like, great, yes, this will impress everybody 8 years ago.
I told him that. I said, look, I said, I've been given this demonstration since 1998. So I get, you don't have to sell me on the technology. I get that this stuff is happening in the data center. And I kept trying to figure out how they were licensing it, because this was the context of this was that, if they found a way to deliver a Windows 7 VDI desktop for $5 a month and that's sustainable, that means all the DAS providers are missing something, or these guys are flagrantly violating Microsoft licensing, which we learned later was the case. But every time that I asked specifically what kind of licensing, how is all this stuff working on the back end? Is it shared hardware? Is it specific hardware for each single person? What's all this look like? He would wave his hands and no, pay no attention to the man behind the glass, and just say no, but you don't understand. This is data center based hardware, and you're accessing it from any one of these devices. And I'm like, I get it. But he just kept going back to the message, back to the message, back to the message. Like he went through CEO press training, which is exactly what happened.
It was like he was on a script. And we, when he said, we have experts working on the licensing, and then went back into.
It was office space.
He had men. Top men.
Would you like to support a young man like me? Like, hey, do you have any? Do you know about money laundering?
Subscriptions to Vibe.
Would you? But so what the best part of On Live, though, is I believe one of my favorite headlines of all time was the article, Gabe, that you wrote once it came out that OnLive was, in fact, illegally using Microsoft's licenses and had to change it. And it's like Gabe's article was, gasp, exclamation mark. Turns out OnLive was illegal all along.
from the news we already knew.
Yeah. And there's some snarky thing in there like, yeah, this announcement surprises everyone. 8 years. It surprises no one.
Yeah, that was a kind of a fun saga to follow. And I feel like Jack and I are the ones that first kind of uncovered that, although I believe Gartner gets the credit for actually putting Microsoft on alert about it, which is fine because they're Gartner. But once Gartner got a hold of the fact that they were doing something against the grain and then alerted Microsoft, that's when all of a sudden now Microsoft gets involved. It's now like, there's blog posts about how Microsoft thinks that they're doing it the wrong way. And that's when all the 15-year-old OnLive users who were using this thing went batshit on the forums. And we're like, no, I can't believe it. OnLive would never do this. You guys don't get what you're talking about.
Oh, they love them
about.
From the video game company land.
Yeah. And they had no idea what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah,
it was in Ars Technica and Wired and got to that level.
Right. Yeah, it got to the consumer.
So that led – this is kind of fun. That led to the next – actually to our biggest story of the year.
Right, because – okay, so to fill in the gap here, we spent a lot of time – while this was happening, we were spending a lot of time trying to figure out if there was some way that OnLive was skirting it, whether they were calling it like that all these people were subscribers so they were all part of the same company, or whether it was some sort of club like the smoking clubs work in bars, like you pay a buck a year and you get a special card that allows you to call it a private club. So you were reaching out to Microsoft saying, hey, come on, you guys have to tell me what's going on here. And you just got freaking stonewalled every time you tried to get anything out of them, right?
Yeah, and because they were like, well, you know, we can't talk about current customers and that kind of stuff. And I said, that's fine. I get that. But just tell me, like, I'm not talking about current customers. I'm just saying, like, I want to deliver a Windows 7 desktop and have people pay for it each month. Tell me how that's possible. And they just said, we can't comment on this. I'm like, no, I'm asking you. Microsoft, my partner, I want to make this business. This is a great idea. I'm going to do desktops as a service. Windows 7, $5 a month. I love it. Tell me how to do that. And by the way, Guy Buell, remember? He was on the show. And was like, you know, I'm going to start a desktop as a service company with the open mission to flagrantly violate, there's that word again, purposefully violate Microsoft's license agreements just because apparently you can. And he says, when they tell me what I'm doing wrong, then I'll cite OnLive as a prior like example and then make it come out in court and everything like that. So that was kind of cool.
If we're ready to talk about this, we also spent that time trying to figure out about how the companion device license works.
Yeah, this is because it all comes in. This is all like the Microsoft shit hit the fan.
Yeah. All at once.
Like February. It was February, March. And so because this
is when because like I was writing, you know, some sort of like, you know, what happens when people bring in personal iPads to the office article, like how big of a deal is that going to be? And I actually said it's not going to be that big of a deal for licensing because they're probably not going to be using Windows anyway. You know, they're going to be using QuickOffice. That was one of my main arguments. But I was talking to Nathan Cretino about this.
We had Nathan on
to help
to
write the
this.
Article.
We've had him on a couple of times, haven't we? He's a Briveform speaker from CDW, who's the licensing expert.
So here's the thing. Like, I talked to him like 2 or 3 in the afternoon, San Francisco time. He lives in Chicago. That's the end of the day for him. He emails me like 2 hours later, so it's like 7 o'clock his time, and he's like, "Check out this more stuff I found." And then he calls me at like. It must have been like 9 or 10 his time, and he's like, "I've uncovered way more stuff." Then 2 hours later, at like midnight his time, he's like, "Is it too late to submit a session to Briveform about this?" it just went deeper and deeper. And the cool thing is, we wrote some articles. I don't know which one of the three it was, like saying, "Hey, this really sucks for Microsoft." Then. Presto, what do? They released a simplified document about how the CDL and all that works.
Yeah. So, and that actually led to our second most popular post of the year,
I don't think we ever mentioned the first popular post.
No, we're getting there. Because so what happens is so anyway, right, so the companion device license, by the way, to refresh, you know, is all of Microsoft licensing is based on devices, not based on people. And so and they're not based on concurrency. So if a user's got two computers and they could use either computer, you need two licenses. Well, with VDI, it means you can, in theory, use any computer in the world. So it's like, well, if a computer's out of your company running around the world, does that mean you need like a billion licenses per user or however many devices are on the internet? Because in theory, they could use any of these things. Obviously, that's like not realistic. So Microsoft's like, no. Like if it's stuff out in the world and it's not company owned, you know, we have this thing called extended roaming rights, which it's the, as long as a primary computer that the company owns is covered, then it works with the other ones. But what's crazy, though, is
– God help you if you bring that inside the corporate.
Yeah, because these extending roaming rights, it only applies to computers that are not in the company's on-premises of the company. So if a user brings in a personal device into the company, then you have to have a license for that, which is crazy because the whole point of Citrix and VMware and all this stuff is like, hey, hooray, we don't care about the devices. And if a user has – you know, the $40 tablet one day and the BlackBerry the next day and the iPhone and the Mac and all this kind of stuff and they're bringing them in their pockets, you don't care. And plus, like, how do you even know? Like, do we have to, like, put, like, metal detectors in the doors and then, like, check all the devices they have? And if they walk in the door with their personal device, we got to charge them a Microsoft license for it. It's like – it's a racket. It's like when you have to buy, like, the compulsory – like, every blank CD you bought was, like, 2 pennies going to Madonna or whatever because you might steal her stuff.
And that's on top of already buying SA.
Yeah. Well, you were supposed to buy additional seats of SA for that. So Microsoft was like, oh, yeah. You know what? You're right. This is going to be hard to track. So what we're going to do, we're going to create this new license called Companion Device License, and it's 15% of the price of SA. So it's like an add-on on top of SA. And it's like that way you're covered in case anyone brings any personal device into the company. So it's a protection racket. Like,
and to Microsoft, this is a good deal because otherwise you'd have to buy a VDA license for each one of these things. So
yeah.
In Microsoft's land, they're saving you, you know, $1,000 a user if they have 10 devices. In our land, we're like, this is bullshit. I already bought a license for this. I should be able to use it on anything I want.
Yeah, and this is the exact same thing as like them like basically saying, if you pay us the 15% now, we won't like torch your dry cleaners. And so this whole CDL concept, I'm like, congratulations. You just basically raise the price of SA by 15%. With like this, everyone, because how can you not buy that? And so, because otherwise you're going to say, prove to me that you have no users walking in your door with personal devices. And also for users who work at home, it's just very, very crazy. I have like shared workspaces. And so this happens. The same time they're not allowing Windows 7 licensing to be sold as desktops as a service, and they're stonewalling me on explaining even how OnLive, again, I understand OnLive as a customer. I just want to know how can we like OnLive could even function. And I was like, Microsoft is just screwing this industry like so bad. And you have to take it because they're a monopoly. And that kind of led to this article. Wait a minute. That led to this article, which was our number one article of the year with 41,000 views. Since it came out 9 months ago, which is four ways, the title of the article is Four Ways Microsoft is Screwing the Desktop Virtualization Industry and Why I'm Quitting the MVP Program. And so that was the date that I quit the Microsoft MVP Program because I was so angry. They were basically like, you know, my face and my like, you know, they have like quotes of MVPs and they talk about the MVPs being the champions. I'm like, you are actively fucking us. Like, we are being bent over a barrel and screwed by you, by these policies, and it's damaging the industry. And they're like parading me around as an MVP. And I want no part of that because Microsoft is the shadiest monopoly. And I just want to have no part of that. And by the way, incidentally, we lost a $2.5 million campaign from Microsoft because they didn't like my views on Windows 8. And to TechTarget's credit, TechTarget was like, well, you know, editorial separate from advertising. So we think that's stupid because people read BrianMadden.com because he's actually independent, but whatever. So props to TechTarget for, you know, doing that. I shouldn't say we lost a campaign. I should say we were bidding on a campaign and they were like, so it was not like an active campaign they went away on. It was just like we were bidding after some business that we did not get and they cited it because I was, quote, lukewarm Windows 8. And angry by that. I was angry because I'm not lukewarm. I fucking hate it.
Yeah,
I was not lukewarm on Windows 8. I'm angry at Microsoft over that. So Now, that said, I'm still going to give them a fair chance. So I got a Windows phone on the way that I'm going to trade out for my iPhone just to, like, try and use a Windows phone for, like, a month and just kind of see what happens. So, like, I still want to – I recognize –
There you go, Jack.
Monopoly or not. Yeah. Jack left his iPhone in a cab in Hong Kong, so now he's
back to
BlackBerry.
Everybody on this call, raise your hand if you've left a phone in a taxi this year. And only Brian is not raising his hand.
But I love it. But your penance is you have to use BlackBerry now.
I went to AT&T and bought their like Go phone or whatever, the pay as you go phone, and just stuck my SIM card in it. So $20, and I had a phone with technology circa 2003-ish, 2004. It even played the same like Hello Moto sound from way back when. So that was my penance. At least you get a smartphone.
Yeah, so Flippy's asking about which phone. So I'm a Verizon user in the US, and so it's the HTC 8X. Unfortunately, I did not get my choice of color, although it does come in red, and I like me some red. But I don't have this thing yet, so for now I still have the iPhone. I don't know. I have no idea. That can be the first show of next year. It's like I used an iPhone. I used a Windows phone for 2 weeks. You know,
I would venture that it's probably not that bad because it's a phone, and so and you hang on. So but you so we used to have this conversation. Remember when Motorola had the Atrix and you know it had the dock and all this bullshit that you know you could use it as a thin client and stuff. You're the kind of guy that wants your phone to be your phone and your laptop to be your laptop and your tablet to be your tablet, and I'm the same way. And so I figure like, yeah, if this phone gets my email and gets on the internet and allows me to play Angry Birds, I'm fine. You know, like it's a thing. So I have a feeling that this phone is going to be just fine for you. It's, you know, there's not going to be any of the frustrations of like the tablet.
Yeah, most of the like, I don't know what Microsoft's map data is. I assume that their maps are better than like Apple's maps.
Well, come on. I could draw you a picture with rough directions to a place. Yeah.
They use Bing Maps, which actually is surprisingly better than Google Maps.
Oh, good.
I still don't use it, but the map data is better. Let me put it that way. The map data is better.
Producer Justin with the quote of the show.
So the thing is, what really matters is what apps they have for when I'm offline. And I am offline a lot on my phone because like I'm on the subway and all this kind of stuff. So as long as there's a New York Times app, then that's like my offline, like email and the Times is what I read when I'm offline. So because everything else, like Uber I use Hootsuite, which is like the Twitter poster, but it posts into Twitter and like our Facebook page and LinkedIn, all that crap at once. But I'm sure there's a mobile version of Hootsuite. There's a mobile version of the website of Uber. So I can make all those things work. TripIt. TripIt is clutch also.
You know, it might have it. And the website will work. You know, do you use it for notifications? Because I found that it's a waste of money compared to the United app, I feel like. But
well, you know, where I like TripIt, so I pay for TripIt Pro. Is that what you do, Gabe?
Yeah, me too.
So I love it when they just buzz you, the app buzzes you. Although I guess you can see this in email and says, like, welcome to Orlando. You landed on gate C45. You need to go to gate. Your connection is gate C28. It's, you know, 300 meters to your left. You've got 12 and a half minutes to make it. You better
run. See, I haven't had that great a performance with it. Usually the United app beats it.
Yeah.
To notifications, especially like flight changes or gate changes.
Yeah.
I do like the email or the text message that says your baggage claim is
Yeah.
So, ooh, I mean, it does have its things, cool. But
although freaking tellers, who's checking bags?
Depends how long you're gone.
Yeah. But, you know, so it's going to be so we'll see. And frankly, TripIt had that problem where they – you hear this? This is like 6 months ago. They had like a time – change problem or time zone problem, and they notified all their users that their flights have been pushed back by an hour.
Yikes.
And this happened when I was en route to the airport. I'm like, oh, god damn it. Well, I'm already in the car, so whatever. But that was a mistake. And so what did they do? They refunded people's like $50. Oh, here, TripIt Pro is free for you for another year.
Yeah, not their $500 flight that they missed.
Or who knows what else that their lives has messed
their
up.
Their change fees.
That's a problem because United doesn't care. To United, you're a deadbeat who missed your flight. They're not helping you. So, and they're like, well, the official United.com app didn't tell you to not come. So, yeah, Gabe, you know, you're right. I mean, the United app is really great. So you're right. This is all speculation. So I guess it doesn't matter.
So what happened next in the year?
We wrote the book also. That's our big thing.
I guess we were writing while all that stuff was happening.
Yeah, that was crazy because we wrote that book like – January, February, March, right?
It was, yeah.
I remember you mostly wrote that book.
I gave my first ever VDI Roadshow presentation. So a 2-hour presentation that I had to create from – I used your slides as kind of a base because that was your session or presentation before them. But I essentially created it from scratch. I was doing that at the exact same time as we needed to write chapters for the book. And so I was – you know, it was these were some long days spent nothing but just like head in – the story of VDI is what it was all about. So for all of January for me, it was just living and breathing this stuff.
We were working really, really hard back then.
I feel like it was, yeah, it was 12, 14, 16 hour days some days, weekends. Yeah. It was a lot of work.
Wow. Thank God that's not now.
Yeah.
Jack and I went out drinking last night on a Monday night. It was awesome. I was overserved.
But I also worked all day Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, yeah. On your book, which is, yeah. We talked about. You know, so the, and I'm thinking about, well, we'll talk about the books later, because I love that we did the VDI Delusion. I've said this before. That is the book I'm most proud of because it was like all original thoughts. It wasn't like a tech guide on how to do something. It was like an industry guide. And as a matter of fact, now whenever I meet with vendors, I make them read that book first, which is why, by the way, I changed my title on LinkedIn to Devo, which is a male diva. And because, you know, you meet people and like they're going to ask me all these questions about like I don't want some storage vendor talking about how great their storage is, like how fast it can do linked clones for VDI when I don't like linked clones for VDI. So I'm like, nope. And then I spend the whole hour of the conversation educating them on why I don't like linked clones. So now I'm just like, no, it's in the book. Read it first. And the first time they ask me a question that is this in the book, I'm like, okay, this dinner's over. Or this phone call's over. If it's dinner, I'll sit around.
I thought you changed your name to Devo because that's a band from Akron.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know the song Whip It?
Oh, isn't that D-E-V-O though, right?
Oh, yeah. D-I-V-O.
But yeah. Speaking of Akron, Akron was on we got another shout out in How About Your Mother again last night.
Yeah, I'm a few episodes behind. So.
Oh, yeah.
So continuing chronologically in the year?
Yeah, that's about it. I also noticed...
I guess nothing happened in April.
looking back, I was going to say also, by the way, I noticed that in January or February, our podcast was number 16. Our first podcast of the year was number 16. And we are now, I think this is episode 41. So we're moving through these things. And these are, you know, I like them. It's a lot of fun. And I like
almost every... Yeah, almost one every other week, which is kind of what we set out to do.
Yeah, and there's no prep. I mean, well, clearly.
I'll tell you what, this show has so much more energy than some of the other ones, though. I love this show.
Yeah. You mean today, or you mean like our show versus podcasts?
I like this a lot better than the TV show or Brian Madden TV. Just because, this is so much more just kind of like throwing it out there with very little prep. But also, like this show today, just because we're going through all the crap that happened during the last year, you know, what's the Seinfeld, you condense all that whole year into 1 hour.
It looks good.
It looks decent. So we talked about acquisitions. I mean, there's some big ones. So obviously Dell bought Wyze, Dell bought Quest, VMware bought Winova, Citrix bought Podio and Zenprise.
And don't forget that other video one.
Virtual Computer, too.
Oh, that was this year? Oh, yeah. Good heavens. Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's huge. Whoops. what other video one, Jack?
It was something in there.
Oh, Citrix bought someone.
Yeah.
And Symantec bought... Did Symantec buy MAM or MDM? That was in the past few years. But
they went and got Nucona or something.
Symantec
right?
bought Nucona and Symantec bought Odyssey.
Yeah. And then Good bought App. Hey, who's App... What are they called? There's a company on four right below us.
I think it's App 47.
App Deploy. Have you heard of them? Did Good buy them or something?
Good bought App Central. It's the name, you know. There's App Central, Appirian, App 47. It gets confusing.
So. But I mean, the big consolidation that we saw. So you know, like you know, we don't have to rehash like every single acquisition. Who cares? But the trend that we're seeing, and this is kind of going to an article that we wrote on BrianMadden.com, and really the theme of Brian Forum was that desktop virtualization and consumerization are really sort of merging together from a content standpoint. Because you know, we had this original idea that consumerization was a separate thing than desktop virtualization.
Yeah, we had, you know, it's been over a year now that we've had consumerized IT, and for the for the first month or two, we didn't know what to do with it, and then in January through the beginning of the year, I started getting into this wing, getting with all of the EMM, enterprise mobility management vendors, and then by the summer, the list of the vendors, they were all
acquired.
Yeah.
And I think we both wrote stuff about the consolidation in that space, where there just has to be, because there's so many little companies and they each do something a little bit differently than the other guy. There just had to be some sort of there's no way that industry would sustain itself with so many different choices. So there had to be consolidation out there. And that's what happened.
But the story is, you know, at the beginning of the year when I was covering mobility, it was all mobility vendors that we had never heard of before in the desktop space. And now it's
now
December.
Dell and VMware and Citrix.
Dell, VMware, Citrix, Absence, and what a change this year has been.
And
if there's ever any indication that desktop virtualization and, you know, what we're calling consumerization are hand in hand, that's your indication.
Gabe, are you saying that desktop virtualization and consumerization are the same thing? Because that's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah.
As evidenced.
I never disagreed.
That's on the radio, so that's true. And so but even like the MDM vendor, the classic MDM vendors are buying now MAM, MIM, app management, you know, so everyone's kind of getting together.
Building up. Yeah, as we saw the emergence of what I like to call the dual persona mobile application management market, the web of interconnected apps.
And we're also seeing, of course, so you know, these companies you mentioned, like, this is for sure where their future is. So you look at a speech from VMware and listen to them talk about their end user computing vision. I mean, they hardly even mention VMware Vue. You know, it's Vue is the way you deliver your old school Windows desktop apps, but the new environment, you've got like this client for iOS, client for web. It's based on all this Horizon technology. So it hooks in your SaaS applications. It hooks in your old desktop applications. It hooks in your thin apps. It hooks in your Horizon Data, which is the Octopus name.
And, of course, for VMware, unfortunately, this is all still theoretical at this point.
Oh, I guess I should say their vision hooks us all together. Yeah, what the hell? Because I thought this was theoretical. I mean, they sketched out this vision like 18 months ago.
Whereas six other companies went from nothing mobile-related to shipping these whole mobile ecosystem products. You know, they've been shipping them for a few months now. Come on, VMware, get with the party.
That's true, because they have – so Horizon Data is real, right? But that's like a separate thing. They have Horizon App Manager, which is real. Thin App hooks in, but like App Blast, Vue doesn't hook in. Yeah, I guess that, yeah, it's all just sort of pieces, parts, and big vision.
Yeah.
I wonder if, you know, remember Kevin Goodman wrote that article saying that he wonders if VMware is going to spin off their end user computing stuff? And he said, if for me, the way you knew this would happen is like, first they're going to brand everything the same. So you're going to see it's like VMware Vue Desktop, VMware Vue Apps, VMware Vue Cloud, VMware Vue Mobile. And that's happened. Of course, Kevin picked the wrong word. It's VMware Horizon Data. It's Horizon Desktop. It's Horizon Apps. It's Horizon Mobile, right? And then there's another rumor that VMware was going to be spinning off their non-core assets, which Horizon, get back to focus on the data center.
I don't know what constitutes a non-core asset.
I would say Horizon. When they say they want to focus on the data center and they're getting rid of like all their cloud builder, I don't know what the word is, but all that stuff.
And look at this. You know, Vittorio left VMware.
Oh, Mr. And Noah left. Noah invented Horizon, or to be fair, Noah was an early product manager and the early visionary for Horizon. Vittorio was a huge visionary. They both went to Mobile Iron, by the way.
Yeah, and you know, good for Mobile Iron.
Yeah, what are mobile? Are they MAM or MDM or both? Or
all that?
Yeah, same as good and everyone. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And that shift is happening all over the place. I mean, Citrix pushes Cloud Gateway now harder than they're pushing or talking about Zen Desktop and Zen App. And I mean, when you go to Synergy, it used to be 2 years ago, they used to lead with, you know, we've sold this many seats of Zen App, this many seats of Zen Desktop. We're desktop virtualization, any Windows desktop, any application, anywhere, that kind of a thing. And now it's, yeah, okay, we'll talk about that in hour two. Hour one, let's talk about cloud and let's talk about mobility. And even the smaller companies like Mocha 5. Mocha 5 was known for, you know, client hypervisor, layering, delivering Windows to all sorts of devices. And even they are now also getting onto mobile data. And they've got a platform now that looks like it can be expanded to include applications and things like that as well. So if you see these companies that have classic Windows-based solutions that are picking a different direction and really going all out into that direction. I mean, Citrix, I came away from Synergy in Barcelona with the impression that we should be learning Cloud Gateway as well as we know Zen App and Zen Desktop. I mean, I really think that I think that this is going to be the new Citrix, and in 5 years, we're not going to see the same company. The same with VMware.
That was actually one of the articles I think you wrote, like, what will Citrix look like in 5 years?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I think that they will still have Zen App and Zen Desktop because there's still, you know, we're still going to have Windows. So for as long as IT needs to deliver a Windows desktop or a Windows application, that stuff will be around and it will be fine. But I think that the future Citrix is not going to be, then they aren't going to be resting on delivering Windows. It's going to be pivoting kind of into this new era, and I think they're in the process of that right now, of shifting their focus. It's crazy though.
You know, in terms of trends, so that's kind of – that was a big deal for me this year. I've been giving these desktop virtualization seminars for all these years, and I've been talking about basically the same thing, like talking about desktop virtualization. It's not just VDI. It's all forms of Windows desktop delivery and streaming applications and all this kind of stuff. But this year, about halfway through the year, my seminars really changed, and – I still talk about how VDI is not the future like we did in the VDI delusion, but the way that we ended the VDI delusion with, look, Windows is just one type of app. We'll deliver those apps down as a service. You don't need the Microsoft Windows desktop to be your aggregation point anymore of all your different apps and data and configurations. You can have that aggregation point live in the data center or the cloud or whatever, and then pull together, you know, your Windows apps and your cloud apps and your personality and your data and all that sort of thing, which is obviously exactly where VMware is going and where Citrix is going. And so in terms of Citrix being on board and VMware being on board, I would say that this year, personally, I am very much on board with that also, which is a big change for me.
So how does 2012 feel? This sounds like one of those weird, you know,
warm and
softball interview questions. Does 2012 feel different than other past years?
I will say yes to that.
Absolutely.
As evidenced by my desktop virtualization seminars. So you know, TechTarget bought us in the end of 2008. I hit the road in 2009 with these desktop virtual seminars. So all 2009, 2010, 2011, first half of 2012, so 3.5 years, the message basically didn't change. Like, I told the story different ways and things evolved, but it was about, you know, desktop virtualization is more than VDI. It's also terminal server and streaming, all this kind of stuff. And like halfway through this year, because this is the big year change at Brightform, when I talked about, you know, consumerization is really affecting us, I think that's a big shift also. So in addition to, you know, the reason why we are doing this is not just – on one hand, it is because Windows applications are losing dominance. On the second, it's because laptop form factor is not the only form factor for delivering applications. But thirdly is the fact that if we don't deliver the applications that our users want to use, they can just go and do it their own way. And that wasn't an option before. Even in the past few years. Because look at Dropbox. Like, Dropbox didn't exist. We did not use Dropbox at Brian Medden Company. And so, did we? We used Groove.
What did we do?
No, we tried to use Groove, and it was too much of a pain in the ass. And I still feel bad today, to this day, because that is all Emily ever asked of us. Emily was our events manager back then, for those that don't know her. She was so frustrated with us because we weren't all that responsive and she didn't have a very good way to share files with us. And that was the only IT request she ever made of us, was to have some sort of file sharing solution exactly like Dropbox. And we could not put that together for her. And like the month after TechTarget bought the company and Emily went and did her thing, Dropbox comes out. So I feel bad about that. I almost want to set her up an account and just share a file. Look, we got it.
Well, it's But that's a big challenge. Like I said, it's Windows apps losing dominance. Actually, here's a good article to write. But it's Windows apps losing dominance, keyboard mouse form factor not being the only form factor anymore that people use for like quote unquote real work, and the users have choice. Those three things coming together, obviously those have been coalescing the past several years, but this was the year when they all hit it together. And I think it's the book. I actually looked through, when I was looking through older articles in the last couple of days, I found some article I wrote from like 2010 where it's like, here's Brian's prediction of the future desktop from 2015. But it was all about the Microsoft Windows desktop and how it's going to be streamed from the cloud and how the applications are going to stream down, all this kind of stuff. But again, that was a flawed vision, because that vision still had the Windows desktop being the point of aggregation.
Ah, but I think that you are correct, because I think that in 2015, that is a possibility that we will be deploying Windows that way. Now, in addition to all these other things, though, but Windows going the way that it is and becoming marginalized is the term I like to use. You actually call it middleware. I would venture to say that Windows is going to be delivered that way eventually.
So that's yes, that's correct for Windows.
Windows desktops,
yeah,
but not the desktop. Yeah, yeah.
I just backed you up. Normally, I throw you under the bus on those wild ass predictions, but this.
So on the personal notes, some big milestones this year. I mean, the biggest one clearly is that Tim Mangan shaved his beard.
Unbelievable! I have to get a new bobblehead. I'm gonna Dremel his beard off this thing.
Dremel in some paint.
Oh man. I haven't seen him, by the way, in person. I just see this like.
I sat next to him in the keynote at Synergy in Barcelona for like an hour and a half and didn't realize it was him.
Until you heard him laughing, you're like, "Where the hell's Tim? I hear him around."
Oh yeah,
somewhere.
I told that story when he was on the show. Yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, it was. That was real. I just made that up right now.
Gabe came in like a few minutes late, or like at the last minute to take keynote. Tim was on my right. Gabe was on my left, and. so I was in between them, so.
Yeah, but I had no idea. So, yeah, I only heard the laugh, yeah.
Big year for Jack. Jack, you just got an apartment that is, it has three things. A, it's a legal unit now. Your old apartment was what they call unwarranted, which is a thing here in San Francisco, which means it was like just someone's basement, and they're like, well, put a door on this and charge rent. So you've got a new apartment now that's got both windows and a kitchen.
Yes.
So congrats on that.
Thank you.
Gabe ran a 5K this year, so like you did the
at this time last year would not have run a 5K. So
speaking of which, we need to get back into running.
You and I've done it a couple of times the last few weeks. It's not bad.
We gotta get back on. I gotta need to get back on Runkeeper and start tracking that.
It's cold as hell now. We're gonna get 7 inches of snow tomorrow. I'm not sure. I think I might have to join a gym.
So that's one of the things that's nice about San Francisco, because I came in today. And I'm not wearing a jacket, and there's not a single cloud in the sky.
So what's your personal story? In the show notes here, it has you turned 35, which was just last week. And each year goes by, I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to post happy birthday to Brian on Twitter, because I don't want your computer to explode.
Yeah, that's why I got off Facebook.
Yeah. So hey, congratulations on turning 35.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Like, way to not die this year. But it's funny, because 35 is always that was always the threshold of a real adult.
You know what? You can be president now.
I thought of that. Like, that was literally what I thought. Like, that was one of the things that was cool.
That's the milestones, right? You turn 25, your car insurance goes down, you know?
Yeah. You turn 35.
Now you have to scroll to select your year when you're signing up at a website.
Turning 40, that's like the top of the hill. Like, we're talking about BlackBerry in 2009 or whatever. And and then, yeah. But so I mean, 35 as a kid, I was a bike racer, and the master's category was age 35 and older. So that's why the old fat slow guys rode, which, I mean, I couldn't even hang with those guys today. But yeah, the Brideform 5K.
Have
by
we
the way,
bitched about the Surface yet? By the way,
no. But hey, okay. I like this idea of the Brideform 5K. So
I'm down.
The only catch is Brideform's always like in July. In Chicago, so it's like, because it last time I went running
like 7 in the morning,
the heat was just unbearable. It was unbearable. But
Flippy, I know Flippy, he was trying to organize something last year. I think maybe the Chicago, like there was a 5K, an actual organized one that was going on already. So I don't know if he ran in that or not, but
indoor,
it would be cool to have a Brideform.
He says indoor at McCormick Place. I think that's an awesome idea, and I believe that would actually work. That'd be amazing. I love that idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's make that happen this year. If we can find someone to sponsor, then TechTarget will get on board, too.
We just rent access to, like, a ring of hallways around the whole place and do, like, five laps.
Rent access? We just run through.
It's just a hallway. Yeah, they're not going to catch us.
Yeah, for the National Underwriters Convention. Sorry that you guys have a bunch of, like, geeks jogging through there.
Yeah, have you seen the guards? You can go through it at 11 pace, and they'd still not get you.
Yeah, so we haven't talked about the Surface tablets.
Let's artificially limit ourselves to like 10 minutes.
All right, yeah. Well, I've got to get a house appraisal at noon anyway, so I have to get out of here. I'm refinancing. Let's see. So here's the article I wrote before the Surface came out, and it was basically like, you know, the Surface is going to be weird, and here's these issues that no one's really talking about. And so I'm kind of curious as to what of those, you know, are actually like still issues today. Here's also, by the way, is Jack's article, which is like his Surface review, which is the closest thing that we had. So we bought one of these things, and
it's sitting in front of me.
Yeah. So Jack used it, and I used it, and Gabe's got it now. You keep that thing, buddy. We need the projector back. Did you mail that back, by the way, Gabe?
No, because I thought you were going to come out, but it didn't come out. So if you want me to mail it, I won't.
Actually, we can use Eric. We can use the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't need it.
I just didn't want to mail it if I didn't have
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that. But I was because Jack and I were going to sit down and work on this book, but now we have AirPlay and a TV.
I'll come out in January or something to catch up. And it's been a while since I was there, so I'll bring it out with me.
All right. Maybe during the week of the sales meeting.
You got it.
So Surface, I don't know. Like at this point, I'm not even energized to talk about it. Like it's nothing.
I kind of want to know. I'm more anticipating the Pro because then you get like the full experience with real Windows desktop and stuff. And I mean, obviously, my first experience. The reason I don't like the Surface tablet that we have right now is for the same reason I don't like Windows 8 in general. In fact, I like this better than running Windows 8 on a laptop because at least I get to touch the damn thing. But that's it. Like that's where it ends. Everything else is just not – like you're at the mercy of the App Store because there's no other applications. You're at the mercy of the apps even working, frankly. Tile, like if I want to instant message somebody and then go onto the web, so then I have to move away from the web browser to go back to the instant messenger. And like everything is – I don't work on an iPad all the time because of that. What the hell do I need this thing for?
Okay, I'm going to interject here. I'm going to be the other side of this. You're wrong. You are very wrong. Well. You are actually 100% wrong. You're not using it right. You can split the screen. I used it for a week.
Oh, that's bullshit. No, I don't want to split the screen. Why?
Why not? No, it totally works. There's a messaging app. It sits in like one third of the screen. I had a Word doc open in the other two thirds of the screen or a web browser. I was able to swap back and forth.
Didn't it take us like 2 weeks to discover that?
How the hell do I split this screen?
You just drag from the side.
Drag from the side.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. I haven't used it for a little while. I can't remember. Sorry. I haven't had it for a while.
Okay, so hang on.
I'm telling you, you're lambasting features, and you're wrong.
I'm lambasting features that are impossible to find because this is the least intuitive damn touch device ever made.
No, that's still the
That's true because there's a thing. Oh, he said it's still the BlackBerry.
All right, I found it. When you started your rant, I started looking, and I just found it now.
But the thing is, okay, fine. That's instructions. Like that's because you know who knows on an iPhone to like double click the little circle button to like multitask or whatever. So that's okay. To me, it's more about the fact that you can't. So obviously, the only apps you can install on this thing are Microsoft, you know, Windows Store apps that are written for Tile World, and so I can't imagine like why if you're buying an ARM-based tablet with long battery life, you know, why you'd buy this which only has like 5,000 apps in the store versus the iPad, which has you know 300,000 apps,
for like $400 more,
right? Because you can, because if you want the Because this Surface is bigger and heavier than an iPad, And so you can get, if you want an iPad, you can get that like integrated case clamshell keyboard that connects via Bluetooth, and it has like battery in the keyboard also. And so like if you want to make an iPad like have a keyboard
into a laptop,
it can be done. Yeah, yeah. So if you want an ARM-based device that can only run touch-based apps with a keyboard, that's an iPad. And so the only reason you're buying Surface, so because you don't get the compatibility, it's not domain joinable, like it's not, you can't run all your apps. So all that, all the value prop of Windows 8, Surface RT doesn't have. So the only reason you're buying Surface RT is for Office.
Let me throw this out there. Everything that compiles for the new Windows 8 is supposedly very easy to port to RT. Like if you've written it for one, it ports to the other.
To be clear,
now I'm
that's only for Tile World, yes, touch-based apps.
No, I agree. I agree completely. But I'm assuming, from at least Microsoft's hope or perspective, is they would, you know, want the developers to develop for the one, and then they would think, oh, well, it's so easy to port to the other one.
Yeah.
That's what they'll do.
That's the idea. Yeah.
But here's the problem. The APIs that they enable for the Tile World, both and the APIs are the same for both platforms. The APIs are vastly, vastly different, like what features are available. So unfortunately, all your existing Windows desktop applications, so like Office, all the Adobe Suite, basically all the apps, you can't just push the button that says compile for Tile World. And it's not as simple as just drawing a new UI for it and saying compile for Tile World. These apps are going to have to be written from scratch. Now, granted, they can use the same tools, the same languages, that kind of stuff. But like Adobe, it's going to be years before we see Photoshop for Tile World.
That's okay. Nobody wants it anyway.
Well, exactly. That's the point. So what we're going to see is the same kind of app. Like, because the idea is like, oh, since this is like a real laptop, it can do real focus-based apps that require a real laptop. Because you could make an argument that all the applications in the iOS App Store are all like little Mickey Mouse bullshit apps. So there's like Adobe Elements or whatever. And there's like the very, you know, like there's the photo editing software with like 2% of Photoshop's features. And so, which is fine. But these are all the apps that are going to be in the Windows Store for Tile World anyway. Because like you, if you're rewriting from scratch, and to be honest, if when Adobe rewrites their applications from scratch, they're going for Android and they're going for iOS. And, you know, like Tile World for Windows is going to be a distant distant third. So go ahead.
Here's an example. I just now went to google.com on this thing. It said, get Chrome to make it seem more familiar. So I click on get Chrome. It knows I'm Windows 8, but it doesn't know I'm Surface. It doesn't know it's WinRT.
Wait, that's not Windows 8. What?
It thinks I'm Windows 8, I should say. does not know the difference. And so I say install Chrome. It even has a picture of Chrome running like the Metro tile. And then I click on that, and it says this app can't run on your PC. So it must not be that easy, because otherwise they would have done it. It must not be that easy.
I don't know. What's their motivation there?
Well, they have to get from the App Store anyway, remember. So, but that's the thing. I mean, this is the point. I mean, it's going back to it. I'm reading about this Surface makes a nice thin client. At 3x cost. Yeah. I mean, like, it's so to me, so the RT, and this goes back to the whole RT thing anyway, like the whole Windows RT. I guess Microsoft can kind of say that, well, once a lot of apps get ported over, but I just don't see it. Like, a lot of our existing really heavy desktop apps, because if you're going to spend all the time rewriting an app, you're going to write a local Windows app anyway. Like I said, if you're going to write an HTML5, Java, web, SAS kind of thing, if you're writing a local app, you're going to write iOS or Android. And, you know, the chance of you writing one of these Tile World applications, like I said, it's only the App Store is full of like, all the BS apps like offline readers and Twitters and like Angry Birds and that kind of stuff. But like legit apps just aren't there. And so so that comes back to the Surface Pro. And I do like the idea. I mean, like, you know, we wanted tablet computers for a long time to be successful. And I always said that, like, if I had a traditional laptop and I had the option of folding the screen around backwards and touching the screen, I would take that. If my Mac did that today, of course. Will I use it every day? Who knows? But as long as it doesn't make it heavier, shorter battery life, more expensive, what the hell? Go for it. You know, I'll take that option. And so if when I flip it around, it can flip over to like a touch-based interface, like that's cool. So maybe I can see Windows 8 devices that are running the Windows 8 Pro. But now we get back to the exact same thing. The exact same problem is that the number of like laptops, like my Ultrabook. So I got a MacBook Air. It's like an Ultrabook category, right? But what's the battery life on this thing? You unplug the power from this thing, and it's got like 3 hours of battery life, and that's not like that's not what a tablet use case is. So if you want like a real Intel processor in this thing, it's going to either A, have 3 hour battery life, or B, it's going to weigh 10 pounds because it's full of batteries, or C, they're going to put a super low processor in it. And you go to Windows8.com or Windows.com and look at all the devices they have. They're selling real Windows 8 Intel architecture devices that are like by Asus and Acer that have Atom processors in them at like 1.8 gigahertz. And the specs that they're getting, they're scoring like 900 on the benchmark, I forget what it was. Whereas
right, when the shittiest i3 is still like 2600.
Yeah, and my current MacBook Air is 5600. So the thing is, they're selling this thing, so they're like 10 hours of battery life. Well, hell yeah, it's 10 hours of battery life. It's a dual-core Atom with a score of 900. But this is not the device, and they're selling it the Intel architecture compatibility for all your applications. There's no way you're running Office and Photoshop and all your applications on your 1.8 gigahertz Atom processor. And so there's just too many trade-offs. It's like the triangle of fast, cheap, easy, pick two. I mean, there's something here, right? It's like lightness, power, and like battery life, like pick two. And laptops, like the reason that these laptops are awesome is because they have no battery life. But an iPad that does. So like this goes back to Intel architecture is just not made for these portable devices. And Surface is a good, or any of these Intel architecture devices, like you got a trade-off. And like I said, if you want something that's fast enough, it's not competing against an iPad because now it's either weighing 10 pounds or it's got 2 hours of battery life. And like I don't get it. So like I said, like these are laptops. These are not tablets.
Agreed. And that's our 10 minutes. I feel like we could just keep repeating ourselves on this. So yeah, I mean there's so many reasons.
So
maybe Service Pack 1 will fix things.
You know,
but that won't fix the devices. That'll just—I mean, yeah, it's not going to make the device cost $300 less and have a longer battery life.
Well, give it time because
they need to include the keyboard. I think that would help. People don't want to pay extra for that.
You know, I do like even the cheap keyboard. I haven't even hooked up the other one. I've used the other one in like a mall kiosk, but I kind of the keyboard I like. It's nice and rigid, and you can rest your fingers on it without it actually registering as a button push. So.
I like the clicky one. I couldn't get used to that other one.
Yeah.
The thing is, by the way, I love there's so many ads for this thing. So many ads. And Microsoft.
How much money? But it's not even ads. It's like they've taken over the Daily Show.
Billboards.
They had a Surface tablet on the stage.
They've taken over BART.
I've taken over. I started thinking about Gossip Girls, like all this stuff. But here's what's crazy. They're trying to make Apple – their ads look just like Apple ads, right? Mm-hmm. They have the word Microsoft in tiny-ass letters you can hardly see until you're like right up to the billboard. And you got a picture of the tablet and a thing that says click in, and it just says Microsoft in tiny letters, and that's it. And they look so much like Microsoft, and the Surface – I'm sorry. They look so much like Apple. The Surface, I mean, it looks like an iPad. This black, it's got bezel, there's no keyboard, you know what I mean?
So you're saying that they're selling iPads with these commercials.
I know, exactly. How many people, I guarantee you, how many people walk into a Microsoft store and be like, hey, can I buy that keyboard for the iPad? That's awesome. Because Microsoft makes keyboards and mouses. Like, that's what people know them for, right? And I guarantee that people are trying to buy. In fact, is there a Microsoft store in San Francisco? Let's hidden camera that shit. And like, try to, like, no, like, we'll take the ad out of the magazine. Like, no, I see this right here. It's like for the iPad. And they're like, oh, no, this is like our thing. It's like our version of iPad. I'm like, oh, sweet. I got so many videos and games. Like, oh, like, why do I want this? Oh, it's like pretty heavy. What are all those holes in it? What's the slot here? Oh, the slot is for my digital camera? Oh, that's cool. So I can take the memory card out of my digital camera and plug it into my thing to put my pictures onto this? Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do because I've been missing out on that shit.
or where's the camera?
The cameras, they're 720p, both of them.
Really?
Wait, yeah.
Wait, there's two?
Wait, it's 720p.
The camera on the Surface is crap.
There are two cameras, and they're both 720p.
They're crappy.
The back one is that's insane.
yeah, it's not a real camera.
Oh my gosh. Well, I guess that's whatever, because luckily the iPhone everyone will have along with this thing has got a good camera on it. So I just don't get Yeah, I don't know. Flippy's got another good point too. Like the Office version is not the real Office 15, right? Like it's the Office.
It's Office RT.
It's the old Office that they like just, you know, like
they recompiled it for ARM and made things bigger, didn't they? I mean,
pretty much.
More or less, yeah.
I don't even find it. What the hell is it?
And it wasn't even super, but it wasn't even that. Like I don't feel like the Office was like it wasn't super quick.
It's not quicker. It's you know.
It's a preview is what's in it. Word like Office 2013 preview is what's on there.
Yeah,
I don't know what that's derived from, but yeah, like it's still starting. I mean,
yeah, like it is not a fast machine. Like to be clear, it is not fast. And browsing the web, it browses the web fine, but like so is my iPad. You know, so like that's not.
Yeah, all I can say is it's a good thing this thing comes with a keyboard with a touchpad on it when using Office.
Yeah. So, you know, and then all the issues, because the partners don't seem happy about this thing. I just can't. I
ask people at my shows, I'm sure you do too, like what plans are for Windows 8. Does anybody have a Surface tablet? Nobody raises their hands. The only people that care or seem to care about Windows 8 are the ones that are waiting for the Surface Pro to come out because they want to be able to give their users some sort of Windows-based mobility that isn't an iPad with a remote desktop client on it.
Yeah, but then their users are going to be
like... They want a touch laptop is what they want, but in a tablet form factor. So, you know, it just seems... Who knows if that'll actually work as a use case? I don't know. I mean, because now there's laptops with touchscreens. I'd rather have that with the horsepower if that's the case.
And don't you think the users are like, hey, this isn't an iPad? And you know, like everybody, you know, they share their tablet with their family and their friends and their kids. And you know, like it's like great. You hand this tablet to your kid.
And your kid's
gonna be like, wait, this isn't an iPad.
I'm gonna take this to my son as soon as he gets out of preschool. I'm gonna show him the Surface tablet, and I guarantee you, he's gonna look at me and go, huh, this iPad's funny.
Wait. Do that for real and film him.
Yeah, it'll happen.
Are you allowed
I
to do that? Like,
no, put it in a box and give it to him for Christmas. And watch him unwrap it.
Dude, I'm not a dick.
We have a spare iPad box here.
Isn't that funny that like doing that can cause like the family services to take your kid away?
kid's getting an Xbox with a Kinect and Kinectimals on it, so he can like play touch with the animals and that. But
he could use the tablet for my Xbox Surface Glass.
Yeah, and I can buy all my music through the Xbox Music Store and all my video through the separate Xbox Video Store. No, there is no ecosystem. It's seven separate ecosystems, but that's a whole other.
Well, so, but getting back to the IT people about it, you know, the biggest thing what I'm shocked about is all of the Microsoft and Intel brand like push about, you know, the Intel architecture on Surface and all this kind of stuff is you preserve the compatibility of your existing applications, and like I said, is the case for Windows laptops and desktop mode, but none of this kind of stuff. I just don't see all these massive applications moving over to Tileworld. Like, I don't see the tide of applications moving to Tileworld because I really believe that if your app was simple enough that you could have written a touch-based version of it, you would have done so already for iOS and Android.
So the
right, if you're going to pick something to develop in, yeah, that, you're not going to switch to something that you could get screwed again. Microsoft has
screwed
too many
developers
already.
Yeah. So shame on me once, fool me twice, fool me 15 times.
So,
best case, we lock into SA. You need SA for this. That's a good point. You need SA for Tileworld, right? So, oh my God, this is an article too.
Did you just give yourself kudos for a thing that you said? I think you did. That's okay. It was a good thing.
You need SA for Tileworld. So you have all these different ecosystems you can develop for. One of them's got tiny-ass market share. Two of them have, like, huge market share. And the one of them locks you in a fucking SA, which is crazy old licensing from, like, the old days. And Microsoft has screwed you again and again and again and again.
And this is
like,
one
you
of
have to be a goddamn idiot to write an application. That's my article. You'd have to be a goddamn idiot to write an application for Microsoft
this
Windows.
Is something that I talk about in my VDI show. Is that, like, Vista rocked our worlds. Like, now we have to redo all of our applications. So what are we going to do it in? Are we going to do it in Windows again? Probably not. Like, you know, we're either going to do it in HTML5, or we're going to go SAS, or we're going to go native or whatever. But it sure as hell, like, people are soured on Windows now. So I'm with you.
And you know what BlackBerry is doing? So the BlackBerry is at our show a few weeks ago, and they, was the consumerization show, and they were saying that they're giving, like, this guarantee that if application developers don't make at least $10,000 for each app, then they'll make up the difference. And I got to find out what that is.
Where can I get one of these application developer licenses?
Oh, hell yeah. I'm going to write about 15 applications this weekend. This one is called
Red. Can get one for Dennis and Meredith and Carson and Lizzie and Kaylee.
How long do they set the price point for the application? And how long do you have to not make $10,000?
Yeah.
This is until 2042.
I'm going to cash in on this shit.
I can tell TechTarget to suck it now. I'm an application developer for BlackBerry. I just wrote 15 applications while you guys were talking about it.
And in 10 years, you're going to be rich.
Yeah.
Except they won't exist in 10 years. So
yeah. I read this guy named Joshua Brown. He's called the Reformed Broker. And he actually has a video on how to short room stock. The main thing is, his main advice is buy options. Don't actually short it, because if they get acquired, you could be screwed on a short. But buy options instead. So you can an option. You're buying the option to sell RIM shares at a certain price at a future date. So the idea is they're announcing tomorrow. Is it tomorrow? What's the date today? Today's the 8th. They're announcing Thursday at their earnings. So we'll see where they are. But yeah. So maybe so now RIM. Okay. So fine. So fourth place, developed for Windows Tile World. The only people who I want to develop for Windows Tile World are New York Times and Uber, so I can have their apps.
And Tripit.
Yeah, for the next month. So that's the service.
All right.
Yeah. So you see Microsoft.
That was 20 minutes.
You
see that's Microsoft. Not bad. We double everything.
Am I lukewarm? Fuck you, lukewarm. I'm not lukewarm. I'm angry.
Well.
All right. What a great note to end on.
Let me just pull that's my a show.
Fuck you. I'm angry. End of the year.
Hey, wait. What are these things on Flippy? I don't know. What's this? You try Xbox Glass. What is Xbox Glass?
It connects to your Xbox over the. It's sort of like.
Oh, that's like the Tile World for Xbox, right?
No. It's sort of like the reverse of what you do with Apple TV, where you connect to it. What you and Jack are
like
using.
They ripped off Apple TV, but did it wrong.
It's like the reverse. Like you're controlling your Xbox from the tablet, basically.
So it turns the tablet into a remote control.
I use the Xbox pretty frequently. I don't play many games, but I use it for a media center. So I wonder if there's any aspect of it.
I think that's why I've got
an Xbox on every TV. So it's now, Xbox just for
remote. You have yourself a giant touch remote.
Well, yeah, it's
thank,
like Apple.
No, I think it's streamed content. Needed.
It's Apple remote.
No, it's streaming content though.
Oh, so you can actually watch content from your Xbox on your.
I believe so. I didn't get to play with it that much.
All right. Well, Gabe, check it out.
I'll check it out and then mail it back to Justin.
Justin wants it back.
Do you have an Xbox, Justin?
I do.
To be fair, Justin also liked the BlackBerry playbook.
I liked it for what I used it for.
To be clear, use case.
Yes.
Which is
I have no comments on an enterprise.
Which is, I got a stack of four of those boxes holding up my monitor. So my neck doesn't hurt.
I'm fine with the use case play, too. I'm sure this thing has use cases.
Also, what I liked about the BlackBerry was more the OS. I think it had a lot of promise. I really liked the way it worked, but it just
sort of the HP touchpad.
Yeah, I promise it'll be awesome next release.
Yeah, you know. Are we?
So we got. So all right. So what's next? Okay, so that's it for the year. So Jack, you're going to Barcelona, for the holidays. Justin, where are you off to?
Staying here.
Nice. Congrats, dude.
Thank you.
I've got four trips in 3 weeks planned. Gabe.
I think I'll stick around here.
Also nice. And so we'll regroup. So hopefully I'll get my Windows phone in the next couple of days. We'll do some year-end review articles. We'll do the zeitgeist, which is how much traffic is on our site to how much spam goes there and that kind of stuff. So we'll be kind of around the next few weeks or so. And we'll sort of regroup in January. And
Colin and Jim and I are on 10 o'clock tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Consumerization Nation.
Yeah.
Is this your year-end wrap-up?
Yeah. So we'll talk specifically about all the mobile management and consumerization news.
Cool. What's a preview of the show?
Just that it was a really, really big year for us. Lots of changes.
Very good and non-specific.
Yes.
All right. Well, so we'll tune in tomorrow at the same time, right?
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, thanks, Gabe, for showing up. And thanks, Jack, for kicking things off today. Justin, thanks for chiming in. And thank you for our four people who are still listening right now. And this will be fun holiday airplane time, so you can put this in your ears, and it's better than listening to Screaming Kids. I guess with that,
you can listen to Screaming Grown Ups.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. Well, hey, thanks everyone. Happy year, and we'll see you in 2013.